Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 79 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. And today we talk about her mood, especially depression, and how to deal with it, how to become successful at managing depression. Before we get going, just know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after this episode and give us a rating and a review, because I read these things. I love it. I love feedback from you. It is golden. So please do it, because we have a fabulous segment all ready to go. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
Oh, how do highly successful people deal with depression? Well, we have a wonderful expert here to help us kind of parse through this sometimes really tough discussion about depression. She is the author of a wonderful book called Beyond Blue, Surviving Depression and Anxiety and Making the Most of Bad Genes. Her name is Therese Bouchard, and oh boy, Therese, I can't wait for you to be on and just get into it with us here. She's the founder of Project Hope and Beyond, an online community for persons with treatment-resistant depression and other chronic mood disorders. She's a contributor to Everyday Health, Psych Central, and other sites, and maintains her blog on therisebouchard.com. She's the author of, as I said, Beyond Blue, as well as The Pocket Therapist, an emotional survival guide. And she and her family live in Annapolis, Maryland, enjoying this beautiful weather now. Thank heavens. Therese, Welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's really a privilege.
Oh, man, depression. It's so tough. Why are highly successful people prone to depression? You hear about this all the time. You know, I was just reading the other day about yet another very successful, you know, person who actually took their life. A lot of people that, you know, it was in the New York Times, and oh gosh, why does this happen? So what's the connection between highly successful people and this vulnerability to becoming depressed?
Well, I think on a biological level, the same makeup, the lack of dopamine, the same reason why they're going for the rush is the same reason why they're ambitious. So they need more and more kind of fulfillment or feedback, success to fill that hole, kind of like an addict. And as you well know, they, in your books and everything, you've discussed this, the more, you know, the more you go after something, the more you need, and it becomes a vicious cycle. So I think the makeup, the actual genetic makeup of a CEO has components of kind of like an addict-like personality that makes them prone to depression. I also think that the personality that makes the CEO, they're risk takers, they're outgoing, they're ambitious, they're open-minded, they're creative, kind of like the mad scientist. That all makes, that's all, you know, makes them prone to depression as well. It's they're not typically the grounded type that are happy with a sunny day. You know, they push themselves and they push themselves too far. And then I think sometimes their goals of, you know, when you think once you have the corner office, once you get the account from Nestle, once you get this financial milestone, you'll feel complete. You'll fill up that hole in the soul, and it doesn't happen. And so then they crash, and that's when they reevaluate sometimes, okay, why am I not happy now?
Mm-hmm. Well, what happens when success, what if you have sudden success? What does sudden success do to someone?
Yeah, sudden success, I think, is even more dangerous because you don't have the resilience. You don't have the backup to really push through. So, I think a lot of these childhood stars, that's why I think so many of them have problems in their teenage and their adult years, because they've had the success early on and they don't have the preparation to deal with it. At least with someone who's grown up poor and really has had to work his way or her way and build up his or her company, has a better shot of sustaining resiliency. But when you just, you write your first book and it's a bestseller, international bestseller, then it's ironic, but you're more prone to depression. There was a story a while ago that said that Nobel Prize winners, actually, after they get their Nobel Prize, they struggle with depression. It wasn't the buildup. I think in an article that I read, somebody compared it to the Olympic ring when you're on a playground and that momentum of taking one ring after another. But when you have sudden success, you're lifted up on those rings and you don't have the momentum to keep on going. And I think that's when you feel the weight of your arms and you feel the weight of your body and you drop.
Wow. So, really, what's the incidence of depression among highly successful people? Because I don't think people, I don't think people really understand how deeply it penetrates.
Yeah, I know. I was started doing the research on this. There's a psychiatrist, Michael Friedman, out of the University of California, San Francisco, that did his own study, wrote a CNN article. And he said in his study, nearly half of the entrepreneurs that he worked with experienced mental health issues. And another study I read that one-third of entrepreneurs struggle with depression, that they were depressed at more than double the rate of the general public, which is pretty profound if you think about it. Those are statistics that are noteworthy.
Wow. And also just the very DNA of the kind of work they do. Competition is wearying. Working all the time doesn't allow them to focus on simple things. They feel detached from their former selves. Privilege may make them less resilient. That's an interesting thing. Privilege may make them less resilient. Sometimes when people have grown up with comfort and wealth, they don't have the skills to weather difficult times. Tell me what that means.
Well, I think that's the kind of the instant success syndrome. You don't have those skills that have helped you earn the success. You've kind of just landed upon it, and so you don't have the discipline or the kind of the resilience to push you through. And it's interesting, some fields have more of this. I think Silicon Valley and, some fields are definitely more competitive, and that definitely feeds into it, the comparing to, the successful people are there because they're very competitive, but they compare themselves to people all the time. And so that is another reason it feeds into depression. If you're constantly, and I know this well, you're constantly comparing yourself to other people and sizing yourself up, it makes you better because, look at the Venus sisters or the Williams sisters. There was a study that said that siblings and people who have constant competition tend to achieve and be more successful, but it's because of that comparing. So, it's good in that it pushes you forward and makes you succeed, but it also can make you prone to depression because you're always, your best is never good enough.
It says, just sort of segueing off that, another vulnerability of being successful is values may change over time. You know, there's a certain emptiness that sets in when you realize that you're achieving what you set out to achieve, and yet you are still not happy. Sometimes when successful people reach an important milestone, depression is common because they are forced to reassess their values. Explain what you meant by that.
Well, this Alice Walton penned that great column in Forbes, and she came up with some of these reasons. And I thought, yeah, they were brilliant. And that I thought that the value, you know, when you seek out, it's kind of what I said before. When you think that the corner office, or when you get a certain account, or when you make a certain financial milestone, that is going to make you happy, and you get to that point and you realize I'm still not happy, and at the same time you've detached from your family because you've been trying so hard to meet these goals that you thought were going to generate happiness, and somehow your values have changed, and so you're spending your time in your corner office that was supposed to make you happy and away from your family, and realize that it was actually your family and missing out on the family is the foundation. And so I think your values shift. And sometimes that can be a critical point where you reevaluate, and it's a great time to kind of, you know, readjust your values. But for some people, they don't see that, and they hit rock bottom. You know, they continue to kind of go down that rabbit hole until their family is gone, you know, or they've worked themselves into kind of a relationship that's not a marriage, that isn't intimate anymore, and no relationship with their kids and that sort of thing.
And so there's got to be a happy ending here. So
there is.
How do highly successful people recover from depression? And throw yourself in there too. You know, what's helped you personally manage this for yourself, because you've alluded to this. So let's go through some steps here, you know, the whole goal with therapy and, you know, willing to go there and how they've reframed it. Go ahead.
It's funny. I just came up with, I felt like at my job, I just wasn't getting the warm fuzzies that I need to feel good. And so I worked with my doctor and I came up with a gold star plan that, with ways that I would feel good about myself aside from work. And so I did this whole plan, and it really was empowering because I realized that there's so many other places where I can get those affirmations and try to, I guess dopamine is might be the biological term for it. But, you know, it was just paddleboarding and time with my kids and reinvesting in my marriage. And I just went through everything and, you know, realized that my picture was lopsided, and I was trying to get all my gold stars from work. And that's why I was starting to slide back into this depression. So to go back, I have a self-esteem file that I put compliments. I think an email from you is actually in there. You know, whenever I get a nice affirmation from somebody on a blog post I wrote, I put it in my self-esteem file. So I went through that, and I just did a couple of exercises to remind myself that it's not all about getting gold stars at work, that life is a lot bigger than that. So I think that's one important step to do that. And the other is just to lessen your expectations. I think entrepreneurs and highly successful people want A pluses all the time. And if you lessen your expectations and try to go for B pluses, then you're not going to be so devastated when you get one. So, you know, I always had that problem in school. I was always devastated when I didn't get an A or, you know, with the top grade. And so I think lessening, you know, that expectation is huge. One that Alice, that she talks about in her column, she talked about the learning the dose of treatment that works for you, basically just learning what you do individually that's going to make it work. You know, some people, I went through a period, and it changed during different periods of time. For a while, it was yoga, hot yoga. I did it every day, and it really just, it did it for me. But for now, it's swimming and running and swinging outside, especially right now, that really gets my mind out of my head.
I love that whole issue that Alice Walton mentioned about the dose of treatment, as you're saying, you know, that dose of what? How about a dose of yoga, running, knitting, nutrition, meditation, you know, journaling, praying, you know, including therapy. I mean, whatever it takes one way or the other, because, you know, if you're a CEO type, then you're creative. And one of the things that gets you going is being able to figure out, you know, how to be able to make something work for yourself one way or the other.
And
so kind of fits in, right?
Yeah, that was one of her points, is that CEOs and successful people know what works for them. And they're creative. And so to come up, you know, kind of like my Gold Star plan, it's like, okay, what's going to work for me? You know, it's all individualized. It's not necessarily the model that you see, you know, medication and counseling that works for some people, but a lot of us need to throw in a whole lot more than that, you know, to really thrive and to feel like we're being our best. So,
here's another one that I thought was really, you know, powerful, and that is, you know, successful people don't see depression as a personality flaw. You know, I think that the stigma is fading, right? And so what do they see it as then? They see it as how? How are they reframing it?
Well, you know, I was really afraid to tell the people at work about my depression and about, I mean, it's all on the internet, so it's not like I didn't have much of a choice. But I was really amazed at the CEO's response. He just, you know, he was like, hey, that happens. It's, you know, it's not a big deal. And I was so fretting, you know. In fact, I gave him my book. And so it was, I think the more, the more time passes, and also CEOs are intelligent. And I think intelligent people know that, you know, the brain is very complex. And for some people, you know, it's the synapses are different and act, not everybody has the same brain, and so I think they're a little bit more think with a little more gray and nuanced perspective because they're smart. And so that works in our favor.
I see. Okay. Well, then I think that reframing is so terribly important. There's also another item in here. Successful people who can really handle this depression thing own the fake it till you make it approach. What's that about?
Well, I think, you know, to be successful, you've had to fake it till you make it. I mean, you're successful. You probably haven't had 365 great days in a row, you know, but you show up to work. You have, you're an MD. You have this podcast. You know, on those days where you haven't slept all that well, you do it anyway. And so I think that whole putting your foot in front of one another, do it anyway, that's what gets you to the top. And that's also what's really important in recovery, is just to, I love the quote, just do the thing in front of you. I forget whose quote that was, but I follow it. Or Eleanor Roosevelt said, I aspire to do noble things, but if I do small things with great love, it's enough. And so I think just, you know, just doing that small thing in front of you 15 minutes at a time that's what CEOs, that's what entrepreneurs do well. They break it down and they get it done.
Well, you know, Therese, I've also seen a very interesting nuance that I kind of like on that whole fake it till you make it approach. And that's fake it till you are it.
Yes. Yeah. I think you have to believe. Yeah. I think have to believe that it's possible. And and I think that you know, when I first I was kind of recovering from a depressive episode when I took this job, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to, you know, do a full-time, you know, everything. And I just kind of pretended like I would be able to do it. And I have been able to do it, and I've been thriving. And so, yeah, I think you take that risk and you just tell yourself what did you say? You're going to fake it until you are it.
You are it, which means you finally absorb this whole thing, that faking is no longer needed because you now authentically and genuinely are it. I think that's a, you know, that kind of took me to a different place mentally the very first time I ever heard that. And I kind of like that. I mean, it just, it kind of works for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Then there's another one too. And that is, you know, successful people who deal with their depression well figure out that a better way actually does exist. And these highly successful people are good at taking risks and seeing potential where other people don't, you know, kind of visionaries. And so this dose of optimism, dedication, and perseverance allows them to identify a better way and to take the appropriate steps to get there. And highly successful people can use their strengths and skills to manage their mood disorder in order to live full, meaningful lives. So it's kind of neat. You take what's good about you and in your strengths, you identify them and you use them as tools to be able to help you navigate what's tough about, you know, your own DNA. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I've really tried to remember when I get down on myself or kind of the type of person I am, a little bit more fragile, that it's actually the fragility and the weaknesses that I have that are my strengths as well. I don't know if you know the poet Guillaume Gibran, the prophet, and he talks about how the cup of suffering is also your cup of joy. And so I think with a CEO, it's really their ability to kind of these holes of opportunity. I think that's what makes them succeed, and they see this perspective that other people don't, which is probably the same perspective that tends itself to melancholy, but it's also a unique way of seeing that seeing the world that's colorful and engaging and beautiful. And so I think if you can see your depression in that sense, that it's this perspective of thing and this, especially with a CEO or a entrepreneurial kind of a way of identifying the possibilities and the future and being able to really forecast success and where opportunities are, then it's really a good thing. You know, I mean, it's difficult. It's not an easy road, but I think you're absolutely right. It's one side of it. It's just another side. You know, your strength is your weakness.
Looking at the strengths of these successful people, there are other, you know, quick little items here that really delineate their character and their bottom line blueprint. One is that they're really pretty good at goal setting, so they can set a goal with therapy, and they can outline those goals, right? Which is really, really important. And then they're willing to, as it were, go there. And this successful group is really the kind of bunch of folk who like to dive into the past and figure themselves out. So they're curious, and they're not afraid of studying that. So you've got the goal setting, you've got the curiosity and the willingness to go there and to actually start, you know, parsing this, you know, into pieces and making sense of it all. Do you see this in the work that you do?
I do. And I love, when Al Fong talks about that, because I feel like the entrepreneur, the highly successful person isn't in denial. I think a lot of people, you know, when they're diagnosed with depression or they feel depression, it's just something that's kind of vague and ambiguous, and it's easy just to kind of blow it off. But because the ambitious person has that personality where you just want to get things done, you want to get to the answer, you want to take care of it. So there's no denial. So you do show up for therapy. You do the thing that maybe is a little bit frightening, but you're a risk taker, and so you go for it and you solve the problem. And I've seen that in my friends that are successful and in a lot of CEOs, that they, you know, they're, they, what what they do in business as far as show up for their business meetings and ask the, you know, the client that they think that will never respond to them is the same thing in recovery. They go for the counseling session and they get to the bottom and they kind of dive into their issues and they're not afraid of what's difficult. You know, they're not afraid of the challenge, I guess. It's, they thrive on that challenge, both in the workplace and in their personal lives. If there's something that needs to be confronted, they'll confront it. Whereas, you know, someone else who's maybe, you know, got a not a risk taker and just kind of not in a leadership role might not have the audacity to get in there and confront the issues and take care of it in that same kind of ambitious and brave way. I guess the CEOs and entrepreneurs are brave, you know, and recovery demands that you're brave. I mean, it's a brave thing when you confront your depression and you go full force into what's going to help you. I think it's a brave move.
Well, I think it's also very important to know that, you know, according to the National Institutes of Health, you know, almost 7% of American adults have had at least one major depressive episode. I think it's really important. That's probably very much understated, but there it is nonetheless. And I found another interesting stat here from your work, and that is that, you know, women with job authority exhibit more depressive symptoms than women who are not in charge of anyone. And again, I think that a lot of this is explained beautifully by most of what we've been talking about, which is sort of the, you know, inner dynamics in the basic DNA blueprint that we see in people who are high achievers and who are, you know, therefore more vulnerable to depression, however it manifests itself, you know, in their life. I think that a lot of it is just being aware, you know, if so when I see leaders coming through their companies, just making them aware of the fact they may be more vulnerable because of the intense challenge and pressures, let alone any of their DNA and back and forth, which only, you know, really enhances this even further. I want to make sure everyone out there knows that we've been talking to Therese Bouchard. Oh boy, she is the author of Beyond Blue, Surviving Depression and Anxiety and Making the Most of Bad Genes. She's also the author of The Pocket Therapist. You're going to learn more about her wonderful work by going to her website, Therese Bouchard. Let me spell that. That's T-H-E-R-E-S-E, Bouchard. And that's B as in boy, O-R-C-H-A-R-D.com. She has done terrific work in this field and has really gifted us with wit and wisdom about this whole issue of mood, success, and our ability to be able to achieve happiness and joy despite our vulnerabilities. Otherwise, you can read so much of her work in Everyday Health, Psych Central, and other sites. And she maintains her blog on therese.bouchard.com. So please run on over there and learn more about her wonderful work. Therese, I just want to thank you for this wonderful episode. I know that a lot of our listeners out there on the Herb Podcast land really relate to everything we've been talking about. And I hope that we've been able to give them some more tips, tools, and techniques to be able to, well, navigate some of those depressive storms out there and kind of embrace who they are and be much more authentic and realistic about moving forward successfully to achieve their own happiness. Does that make sense, Therese?
Yes, it does. Yeah. And thank you so much for this opportunity. I love your work and I love that you're out there doing all this. You're a great, influential person and happy to know you.
Hey, you know something? It takes a team, Therese. Why do you think you're on? You know, come on. This was excellent. So tag, you're it. You're going to be on a boatload more times because we need to hear more of your wisdom. So once again, thank you so much for being on the Herb Podcast.
Thank you.
All right. And everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please just take a moment or two and give us a rating and a review, because we love to hear from you. Love, love, love. I read these things, you know. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.